Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I do it for an audience of real entrepreneurs who are often building their businesses while listening to these interviews. And I know it because more and more of the people who I interview say that they listened and now they're looking forward to giving back. All right. So when I prep for an interview, I do a lot of research. And I remember one time I was interviewing someone who was in the insurance business. And I thought, you know, let me just do a little bit of research. And I filled out a few forms online and I said, you know, one of these sites I could actually probably sign up for because we do need new car insurance. And then I went to do my interview after I filled out their form. And while I was doing the interview, my freaking phone rang. And I hate for my phone to ring. Even my wife knows. She texts me and says, you there first, to just see if she can get on a call with me. But these guys didn't. They just called me in the middle of an interview. It was very disturbing. It was probably my fault for not hitting do not disturb. But still, while I was doing the interview, I saw that the message got converted into text, and it was clearly from this company that I just filled out their form, calling me and interrupting my day. And for some reason, I let that bother me more than it should, and I decided, no way am I going to do business with those people. I don't even want them in my life anymore. Well, if you've ever experienced something like that, you probably know that you don't want to do that for your customers. You want to give them better experience than that. Well, today's guest is an entrepreneur who came up with a solution for it. And as a result, he's been building a business that's been growing and growing and growing, even though he is a bootstrapper. His name is Aaron Christopher Evans. He is the founder of Drips. They use conversational text messaging to help their clients contact users when it's convenient for their users. So you can imagine if the company that I was filling out a form for were using Drips, they might have sent me a text message recognizing that it's the middle of the day and say, hey, Andrew, when you're free, we're available to talk. And then I could have responded back and said, you know, I'm not free today. Can we talk tomorrow? And then scheduled a call that made sense, or maybe said, I'll call you and get on a call with them right away. But it's in my hands. That's the idea behind Drips. And as a result of that kind of conversational texting experience, they help their clients close more and more sales. And as a result of that, they close more and more sales themselves. All right, we're going to find out how he built up this business. This interview is here thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first is no longer going to be a sponsor of ours. I think this is the last ad they're running. It's called Design Crowd, and I feel like I've let them down because we didn't give them a big win, just an okay win. All right, and I'll tell you why I'm in love with them and a little disappointed that they won't be sponsoring us, Design Crowd. And the second is a company called TopTal. I've used them to hire a lot of people, and I urge you guys to, and they've been advertising a lot, which means that many of you are using them. And I'll tell you about Design Crowd and TopTal later. First, Aaron, I know you go by AC. AC, it's good to have you on here.
Thanks, Andrew. How are you today?
Good. Dig your setup, by the way. Look at that. What's your annual recurring revenue?
We're currently at about a $10 million ARR.
$10 million. You started the company how long ago?
First time we showed Drips at a trade show was January 2016. So we've tripled revenue, and then this year we'll doubled last year.
And I said bootstrapper, but it makes it sound like it's super easy. The truth is that it's kind of tough, and we're going to talk about some of the difficulties involved with that. But let me talk about one of the inspiring moments that happened to you long before you started Drips. You were at a friend's house and you saw that his parents had a bunch of computers. What were the cars that they had? And walk me through that experience.
So it wasn't his parents, actually. It was his house. So this is my junior year of high school. So 99, my friend Jimmy was a senior in high school. We were on the wrestling team together. And this guy drove around a Porsche 911 Carrera, convertible Porsche. He had an H1 Hummer, both canary yellow. It was ridiculous and amazing. He had his own house, very nice, you know, a couple $100,000 house. And his parents, I can't remember what his mom did. It wasn't anything extravagant. And his father delivered pizza at the local pizza shop. So everybody's seen him with these cars, and everybody, there's always rumors about what he did. You know, is he a drug dealer? Is he, you know, peddling this or that? Like, you know, what is this guy doing to make this kind of money as a senior in high school? But anyway, long story short, I visited his house one day. I can't remember what the context was, but I walked in and he was showing me the place, and I walked into his office, and there was a room not too much smaller, larger than the room we're in now. And there was probably about 15 old school, you know, Dell just computer towers. Some of them had the sidings ripped off of them and fans blowing on them to keep them cool. The room was about 105 degrees, right? I mean, it was brutal. If you walked into it today, you would think, oh, this guy's mining Bitcoin or something, right? Just dozens of computers stacked on top of each other, running things. And I said, what in the hell is going on here? Right. I'd barely even used a computer, or had a computer at the time. And he said, oh, these are, you know, candidly, he said, these are my spammers. I'd never heard the term before. This is before the report spam button, you know, I was like, what is a spammer? And he started to explain it to me, turned on one of the monitors, and on the monitor was AOL popping up. This is like AOL 4.0 maybe, right? AOL would pop up. It would literally dial in. You'd hear the, you know, and as soon as it got in, it would jump into a chat room and it would drop a link to, I think it was like Make Money Working From Home or a dating site or a weight loss pill or one of the three things that are still being spammed out today, right? And then it would go to the next chat room. It would do the same thing over and over and over, 24/7, 365. Across, you know, multiple computers, across multiple accounts that this guy had created. And I was still confused, right? I was like, how is it doing this? Why is it doing this? He's like, well, I send out these things for these advertisers and they pay me every time I get a sign up, right? And I was like, well, how did you make the computer do this? And he explained to me that he programmed it. He was one of the original kind of AOL guys, right? Like back in the day. He programmed this tool that would automatically send out mass marketing, right? And he did email and other things as well. But he was an affiliate. He was a webmaster or a publisher, if you will. And these companies would pay him, you know, for signups. And he explained to me that these computers that he only had to reboot maybe once a week, you know, run some antivirus on, whatever, were outputting the equivalent of like 120 people, right, working 24/7, 365. And he said, but I don't have to pay my computers, right? I program it once and it automatically does what it does. And my mind was just blown. I was hooked instantly. It wasn't about the money. I mean, that was obviously interesting as a young guy, but it was more about the automation behind it. I'd never seen anything automated before, right? Like that. And when he said that these things are working as hard and as fast or faster than 120 people would without having to pay that kind of payroll, I was just blown away because I think I was like washing dishes or something at a restaurant at the time, you know. So it was super interesting to me. And he was the guy that you know, kind of opened up my eyes to the world of affiliate marketing.
You ended up in lead gen. What kind of lead gen were you doing? And that's kind of where you got the idea for Drips. But what kind of lead gen were you doing?
It was a lot of different things. Insurance was one of them. From the beginning, Jimmy taught me a lot about programming and how to do this automation stuff. I then started getting into graphic design and building websites. We built one of the first doll maker websites of its time. It was a site called CustomSouthParks.com. Probably a lot of your listeners built one of these little South Park characters at one point where they can, you know, they can change the hair and the eyebrows and the shirt and give it a little quote and share it on MySpace. We had tens of thousands of people making these a day. And I realized that on the back of that, I could sell those users' information. So they would go to save the cartoon and I would say, hey, look, this is a free website. To help support us, you know, we're supported by ad revenue. Could you please fill out this short survey? And the survey was something like, would you be interested in switching your cell phone provider to save money? Would you be interested in saving money on your car insurance? Do you have student loan consolidation debt? Do you need credit repair? You know, yes, no questions, co-registration questions. And I was able to monetize on that user's data multiple times. Much to their dismay, as you've experienced, you know, I would sell that data and then somebody else would start hounding them and calling them. But we were able to earn about $5 a user that filled it out. And we were, you know, doing a couple thousand, you know, sometimes thousands of registrations a day. So you can do the math. It was a really good earner. Got sued by Viacom eventually for that. Viacom, who owns Comedy Central, who owns South Park. It was interesting. We ran this thing for months and months, maybe even over a year. This is back in 2006, I think. did a ton of lead gen, you know, worked directly with a lot of big brands and lead sellers. And we had a constant demand from the fans, right? Like there was a lot of people that loved this site, the big community was around it, you know, South Park fans and whatnot. We had a lot of demand for physical product, you know, cups, mugs, t-shirts, posters, calendars. And we were going to make a deal with Cafe Press or something like that to enable them to do their own printing. But instead we said, look, we don't need to make money off of this. We just want to give the fans what they want. We hooked up with a local t-shirt company and sold the t-shirts for cost. So we charged, I think, $12, and that was including the t-shirt, including shipping. And we, you know, we shipped 100 or so t-shirts. I think 3 weeks later, we got a cease and desist from Viacom. So they must have been watching this the whole time. And we were young guys; we didn't know any better, right? Before we were selling the t-shirts, it was completely legit, right? It was an ad. Revenue-driven fan site. We weren't selling the copyrighted, you know, art, right? Yeah. But the second we printed it on a t-shirt and sold the t-shirts, even though we made no money on it, we were infringing on Viacom's, you know, IP, and they came after us pretty hard. But so that was a good lesson to learn there, and that knocked me on my butt, you know, and caused a whole bunch of other financial issues. But you know,
what do you mean? What's the other financial issue?
Oh, well, I was young and was not saving properly for taxes, long story short.
What did you spend money on?
A house, a car, a girlfriend, you know, trips, yeah. Travel, food, you know, nothing. I was never like a big Rolex guy or anything like that, but you know, I bought a house that I couldn't afford, just like most people in 2006 and 2007. Yeah. I could have afforded it if Custom South Parks didn't get obliterated. But I was naive in my young entrepreneur days of imagining that my project at the time would continue on forever, right? So the first three quarters of the year, I'm like, well, I spent all that money, but no big deal. I'll just save the last quarters to make sure I pay for the taxes. And I'm sure
there's not something like that. You have to go negotiate with the government, don't you?
Yeah, you pay them eventually, one way or the other. And luckily, I'm all that chapter is behind me now. Me and Uncle Sam are super square, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. And I save now. So now, when I get a paycheck, even for my current company now, when I get a paycheck, I literally have it because I have to do guaranteed distributions, yep, technically, because whatever, because it's an LLC and I can't take a regular salary. But 35 or 40, I can't remember, percent of my paycheck literally goes to a long-term Amex savings account so that I don't even see the money. You know what I mean? Like it's just gone. It never hits my bank account. I don't have to worry about it. So lesson for any young entrepreneurs out there, if you can set up some automation like that around your pay, if you're a 1099 type person, do that, because the alternative is a rough road.
I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs have that issue. We don't talk about it because people are embarrassed by it, but I see that it's an issue. It eats up people who are going through it, and they always think that it's just them. They always think they're the only ones, but they're not. And I'm glad that you talked about it. You also discovered through lead generation that there was this gentleman you were working with who was doing student loan consolidations. You were, I guess, helping him get leads, and he was paying you per lead. And he was using SMS, text messages. How was he using it, and how did that inspire you to create this company called Drips?
Sure. So the fellow you're talking about is actually currently a minority partner in Drips. One of three. You have myself, my co-founder, our CTO, Anthony, and you have Tom. Tom was our first client. He was really the kind of the guinea pig or the test monkey, if you will. He calls himself the inspirational genius when we're on stage together talking about it. But so he had a lead gen project, right, where he was buying traffic on Facebook, people looking for student loan consolidation. He was able to, you know, just for simple math, let's just say he was buying these leads for a dollar. He could convert 10% of them into a call via his SMS blaster, and he was selling the call for a little over $10. So he was making a decent, you know, 10, 20, 30% margin on his spend. He was leveraging Facebook accounts and leads that we had set up for him. So we were in that equation. So we were helping him run these ads and allocate these resources for these Facebook accounts. So I was incentivized to keep him buying leads. One day he called me and he said, AC, my texter broke, my text message platform broke. And long story short, his CRM, just the texting part of the platform just stopped working. He got blocked by some of the carriers, but anyway, I asked him, I said, well, what did your texter do, right? What was your SMS platform doing? He said, well, every day at noon, it'll send out a text message to the last 7 days worth of leads, right? So imagine getting the same message every day at noon for seven straight days, right? If you're this person that just filled out an insurance form or a student loan consolidation form. And the message was atrocious. It was, hello, thank you for filling out the form. This is Student Debt Freedom, whatever, you know, I can't remember the brand. Call us back at 888-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And it sent that message every day at noon. But that was enough to get 10% of these leads on the phone, and he was able to convert those to calls and sell those calls and make a good ROI. But when the texter broke, the phone stopped ringing. So he said, I can't keep buying leads. I can't keep funding these Facebook accounts because this thing broke. I said, well, that sounds rather simple. Let me see if I can just rebuild it for you. And I stayed up all night. Me personally, I coded the first version of what would eventually become Drips. It was about a 4 foot tall PHP script, very minimum viable product, very proof of concept. It did exactly what Tom's original system did. And then when we turned it on the next day, he was converting 15% of his leads. So instead of 10%, it was a 50% increase in conversions, lead to call conversions. And he's freaking out, right? Because now he's instead of a 10% ROI, he's like a 50%
ROI. What did you
do
that got him such an increase? I understand, by the way, if you send someone a text message and get them, or I guess he was sending out a text message at first, mm-hmm. getting people to call up his salespeople, and then the salespeople will close the deal, right?
That's right. Yep.
And so I get the power of that. What was he doing? What were you doing that got him a 50% increase in results?
Yeah, it's actually really simple. The creative, right? Like in any marketing or media or email or direct mail or yellow page ad, the creative is always the variable, right? And his creative was, hello, thank you for calling, or thank you for submitting your form. And he sent the same message every day at noon, right? So my message instead said, hey, Andrew, thanks for submitting or thanks for finding us on Facebook. So I added, you know, personalization using the name of the person. I added recency and social proof by mentioning the platform they came from, Facebook, Google, et cetera. We're really looking forward to helping you resolve your student debt. Please call me back anytime today. Here's my number. So now I added a human element to it. It looked like it was a real person. It wasn't demanding. They could call back whenever they wanted. I left the number in the message, and boom, we got a 50% increase in lead to call conversion. So he's happy, right? He's back. He's live. We didn't have to turn anything off. We're happy because, you know, we're still able to help him monetize this. And then he quickly, you know, the same day after I still had any sleep from 36 hours, and he said, well, what else can we do? You know, you made a 50% increase by just working on it one pot of coffee overnight. What else can we do? And I said, well, you're doing the same message every day at noon, every day, right? Same message for 7 days. And I said, what if we did a different message at different times and added some context to it, right? Like some recency context. So I changed it up, you know, for the next day, and then it would do a good morning message at 10 a.m. Her to do a lunchtime message, and it would say, hey, hope I caught you on your lunch break. 2 days later, we do an after work message at 6 p.m. Hey, I'm trying you after work. Haven't been able to get a hold of you the last couple of days. The last day, it would do I'm here for one more hour, you know, some scarcity. I'm here for one more hour. If you're not interested anymore, no worries. If you are, let's get this resolved for you. And we jumped up to 20-25% conversion with that, because now it's a better user experience. There's context into why and when we're reaching out. And then there's just a lot of iterations past that. But long story short, he's getting rich now, right? Like, he's just crushing it. He's spending a dollar on Facebook and he's making $5. Now he's buying all the leads he can get. I had to bring in my partner, our co-founder, Anthony, to rebuild this Frankenstein of code that was about to explode, right? Because I'm not a great developer by any means. I'm what my programming team call a bro-grammer, which was a new term for me. But so Tony rebuilt the whole thing. You know, over a weekend or over a week or whatever, did it in proper code, proper databasing. There was actually a start stop button, which was new, you know, and he told me that we were having over 1,000 errors a day, errors in an error log. And I didn't even know what an error log was. I didn't know there was an error log on the server. And I said, well, what are the errors? And he said, well, every time somebody texts you back, it's causing an error. Yeah, because you're not handling it properly. There's no handler, and Twilio, our telephony provider at the time, is looking for a response on what to do, and we don't have a response, so it hit an error page. So I said, and then I was like, people are texting us back, you know, like, that's weird, yeah. Right? Like who would imagine? So I said, well, what are they saying? And he pulled a log, and he sanitized it, and then I looked at it, and I'm looking at hundreds and hundreds of rows of responses, and the responses, this is kind of when we fell back into what we call conversational texting. The responses were, can't talk now, call me in 10, I'm at work, you know, leave me alone, I don't need insurance, who is this, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of really good context. Very interested and wanted to call right away, and they were getting a call the next day. Some people didn't want to call, and they were getting another text 5 minutes later. Some people wanted a call the next day at noon, and they were getting a call the next day at 9 a.m. I mean, it was just the broken part of it was so obvious to us that we were like, oh my God, there's so much context here that we could, if we can contextually, you know, have conversations with these people and give them what they want when they want it, right? We will convert even better. So Tony built a chat room. Long story short, and we staffed a few operators out. So we literally had three people working, you know, normal shifts, just responding to these messages. So if they said, call me in 5 minutes, they click the 5 minutes later button, they hit call, and they said, no problem, we'll call you then. If they said, leave me alone, they click the do not call button. And boom, we got up to the point where we were over 40% lead to call conversion. So over a 400% increase of where he originally started.
That is amazing, and it makes total sense. And I could completely understand it. And so then you say, you know what? This could be the next big thing. Or is it that Tom's friends started coming to you and they told you that, you know what? Let's hold that answer for a moment. I want to tell everyone about my first sponsor, and I'm disappointed that they're leaving me. It's a company called Design Crowd. I've talked about how great they are so many times, but I guess I didn't win you guys over. So this is my last chance to tell you to go check out designcrowd.com/Mixergy, where you get a big discount. Here's the latest great experience that I had with them. You guys already know, I told you with Design Crowd that when I needed a new design for my cover art, for my podcast, I went to them. I filled out a simple form. Even though I hate design, I love when it looks good. I hate figuring it out. I filled out a form and they made me into somebody who could explain exactly what I wanted. And I ended up with not just one person and one design, but dozens of people in about 100 different designs. I helped shape it by giving feedback about the ones I liked, about the ones I didn't. And it kept growing as all these people were working on my design. And they gave me what I think the greatest cover art I've ever had on Mixergy. All right. So I told you about that. Here's the latest thing that happened. I am Russell Brunson, the founder of ClickFunnels, invited me to come out to do this thing with him that I don't think I could talk about yet. But he said, Andrew, I need the cover art of your podcast and I need it in the original Photoshop file. And I go, I never downloaded that. Who cared about it? Apple didn't want that, so I didn't download it. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go to Design Crowd. I went to Design Crowd. My account is obviously still active. And I just went in and I saw the whole interaction that I had and the full collection of files that the designer who I picked, you with Design Crowd, even though dozens of people create designs for you, you only pick and pay for the one that you love. Well, the guy's design who I loved, he didn't just send me the design the way that iTunes needed it, the way that Apple needed it. He gave me everything, including the Photoshop file, and it was still there in Design Crowd. With one click, I downloaded it, I sent it to Russell, and it was off. This is the thing that I got to tell you about Design Crowd. It is so good, but you will not believe it until you try it. And maybe that's why I lost them as a sponsor. But I got to tell you, I love them. I want you guys to all go check them out. And if you use this URL for a limited time, because they're no longer going to be a sponsor of mine, they're going to give you up to 100% off their already low prices. The site is designcrowd.com/Mixergy. designcrowd.com/Mixergy. I'm a little concerned that one of the reasons why they didn't continue AC is because they can't possibly have enough margins. I paid about $100 for that design. They had to pay the designer some money. So I imagine that their margins are probably small because their price is really low And so we'd need like dozens, hundreds of people to sign up from these ads. So I don't think that we didn't get enough, that we didn't get customers. I just think we didn't get enough customers because their profits got to be super low on this.
All right. Yeah, it's got to be a small margin. And I know they have some competitors in the market space. I've used that methodology before, actually for the Drips logo that you see on my chest here. And I'm a huge fan of that methodology, crowdsourcing design, because you can always, you know, you can get a great designer and you can get three or four great ideas for a logo out of that great designer, but you can't get dozens or hundreds of right. different opinions on ideas for a logo. When I did the Drips crowd sponsor contest, this was not the way it came out, but one of the designers did a subliminal drip in the D and the P, and another one did something else that I liked, and I was able to kind of cobble it together. But without nice. Seeing literally hundreds of different viewpoints on the logo, I can't believe everybody doesn't do this for a logo. Just to throw that out there, like it's the cheapest, most unbelievable way you can get hundreds of logo ideas or landing pages or websites or business cards.
Yeah, you're right. Even if you have designers, it's so paced to go to get dozens of other designers to go reconceptualize what your idea is. And then you pick the things that you like, you merge them, and then you end up with something that you wouldn't have thought of on your own and no single designer could ever come up with.
That's okay, exactly right.
Let's go on with your story in Drips. And I do love your design. Dude, by the way, not only do I like your logo, the freaking shot that you have set up for this. And I know you've got that remote control. Who was it? Brandon on your team who set that up? Look at that.
Yeah, you probably can't tell. You
look at how
it.
You're panning around. Dude, what's that desk?
Oh, so I designed this. So this is all old school communication devices. So, you know, it's kind of like a graveyard of, you know, cell phones and Blackberries and Dell.
I see it. Let me describe for people who aren't listening. He has got this glass encasement that then becomes a desk. Inside this glass box is old typewriters that just look beautiful, old computers, old, as you say, communication devices like phones. And what's your message to yourself and anyone who sits there from all that?
Yeah, they always, you know, everybody always asks. I say, to me, it's kind of a graveyard of all the stuff that we thought, you know, was super advanced at the time. I mean, even, you know, we got iPhones in here for crying out loud, right? But you know, a year later, 2 years later, 10 years later, they're completely obsolete. We bought this stuff for nickels at a you know, at a flea market. So it's just, you know, it's as we're sitting on top of this, designing the newest forms of communication, it's kind of a nod or homage to the stuff that came before us.
Is it also kind of a memory or a reminder, hey, this stuff could go away? Kind of like if you go to Facebook's office here in Palo Alto, you look at the back of the signs, and I think it's the Sun logo is still on there because they took over Sun's offices and they wanted to keep reminding people, we are painting our logo on one side, keeping the old logo on the other to remind you, even the biggest companies can go away. Fight like you could die tomorrow.
Yeah, I love that. I always say be the company that puts yourself out of business, right? Like, so yeah. That's another thing that we talk about a lot with this, like, and why we don't stagnate while we're always testing and proof of concepting new methodologies, new tools. We could have stopped doing what we were doing back when we were converting 47% of Tom's leads, you know, in 2016, but we every day we're coming up with new features, new ways of doing these messagings, new methodologies, so that we're always way, way, way ahead of any would-be competition.
Oh, I love that, man. That's so inspiring for me. I'm going to take your story on our Tuesday company meeting and remind everyone we have to keep changing. We have to keep innovating here. All right. So the next customer, I understand Tom, and by the way, I've been looking up Tom Martindale. Dude is impressive. He's one of those guys that is in like the lead space, probably has a bunch of clever things that have worked for him over the years.
Oh yeah.
That we probably could only really find out about if we had drinks together. Does he drink?
Right. No, he does not drink at all, actually. Super interesting guy. He's had his finger in a lot of things. He's a little older. He's, I think, 50 years old now. He runs circles around me in the gym. He's definitely a good guy to have on our team.
Seen a lot. Wasn't he in Ohio, and now he's in LA from what I see?
Both, yeah. So he calls himself bi-coastal because he has a house in Hollywood Hills, and he has a house in Akron now. His which is funny because his place in the hills, I think it, you know, his mortgage or his rent or whatever probably is about 10 times as much as his place in Akron. But his place in Akron is like a mansion. You know, like he was laughing. He said, "Man, this is cheaper than my car payment, my California house."
You know what? I've got a few friends who do that. The most notable is what's his name? Will Schroeder from startups.co. He bought Zirtual and a couple of others. He also was in LA, and I think he and his wife moved there too, but they kept their home in Ohio, and the freaking place is gigantic. It's beautiful, yeah. Super comfortable. And I kind of feel like Ohio has a bunch of these really smart entrepreneurs who are not funded, who are not the Silicon Valley prototype, but boy, are they good at generating sales. Boy, are they good at business. And it's the kind of stuff that you don't usually hear on TechCrunch or anywhere else.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because everybody always, the stories are always like, who raised this? You know, who got bought by that? And there are some stories out here. A buddy of mine, one of my best friends, actually, Mark Jenny, his company RV Share, which is Airbnb for RVs, long story mm-hmm. short, they just had a $50 million cash injection into their company. It's a local Akron company. But he bootstrapped as well. Like most entrepreneurs in the Midwest, we just didn't grow up knowing about VC or private equity or funding or you know, any of that stuff. There was no Shark Tank back then, right? So nobody was thinking about it. What we did have was guys like my buddy Jimmy, you know, rolling around in Porsches, you know, just crushing it, making a ton of money. And that's what he did. He focused on execution just like we did. And that's why, you know, there's very little about drips when you Google around on us. Because we've just been focusing on execution to get ahead of this market that we think is about to explode, and now we're at a point in a position where, you know, we want to tell the story a little bit, and that's why we're here.
So let's talk about the second customer. Where did the second person come from?
It was exactly what you said. It was Tom's friends in the industry. So Tom was our first client, our first salesperson, our first partner. You know, a lot of the guys that he knew that he was working with, they were wondering what it is that he's doing. And, you know, he kind of, you know, lifted up the skirt a little bit, told him about what at the time was called Text Drip. It wasn't even called Drips at the time. And he came to me and Tony, said, guys, look, this is going great and we're all making a decent amount of money, but you can make a business out of this, right? And Tony and I had multiple different projects. We had a marketing company. We had a software company. We did software for iOS for some of the biggest, you know, Fortune 100 companies out there. We did a bunch of different things, and this was just going to be another project that we decided to try to put some effort into, and we did, and we showed it at a trade show. It was a trade show called Contact.io. In I think it was San Francisco in 2016 January, and we got a couple logos almost out of the gate, which was great. The first one was 3 Day Blinds. They have a very, very progressive chief revenue and chief marketing officer, Dan Williams. He's like the kind of marketer that, you know, he speaks at Google, he speaks at Marketo, he speaks at Facebook. So very, very well established marketing guy. And he and brands like his and 3 Day Blinds are always testing stuff, right? They see something new, they test it. They see something new, they test it. They break things. He once told me that if somebody comes in, he hires somebody and they haven't broken something within 6 months, they're pretty much about to get fired. So they're big into testing things. So luckily we got a good brand with him. We made a huge impact on their business. And he's been an evangelist ever since and a friend of mine.
I'm on 3 Day Blinds website. These guys are direct marketers who will sell you blinds. Is it in person or online?
Yeah, they're in person. So they're the biggest in their brand. We actually have 3 Day Blinds in this room, even though they can't see them. But they will come into your house, show you all the different, you know, types of, you know, in-home consultation, different fabrics, different types, you know, mechanical, otherwise. And then they will come in and install everything all within a 3 day time period. So it's a luxury. Kind of
that you want to talk to someone, you want to get info. And I could see on their website, they are really prominently featuring both phone numbers and chat buttons. But the big thing that takes up the most space is the big communication thing is fill out this form to tell us about yourself and include phone number and email. And what would happen back before you was someone would fill out a form with a phone number and then would a salesperson call up?
That's exactly right. They had a call center, in-house call center, I think a couple dozen agents, and they would take that lead and they would try to call them. And a lot of times it would be a very similar experience that you had with your insurance company is, you're probably at work, probably on the computer. I guess you're allowed because you own the place, but a lot of people are browsing and, you know, plugging in their information to 3 Day Blinds in the middle of the day from their work computers, and then their phones start ringing, right? And they're like, oh my God, you know, they're ignoring the calls. So we, you know, we took over that whole effort. We do the texting and the calling thing for them now, and they now have no more outbound call center at all. They only take inbound calls. So any form that goes through there, any drop off in their customer journey, any people that don't show up to their appointments, that all goes through Drips. Drips reaches out as if we were 3-Day Blinds in 3-Day Blinds' voice. And we engage with their users in a polite way.
You had people to do that. All you would do is when it was the right person, first of all, when someone chatted back, you would chat in, you and your software.
That's right.
And then when it was time to make the call, you would connect a 3-Day Blind salesperson to them.
That's exactly right. It would be a recording. It is all automated. So it would just, you know, your phone would ring from the same number that you've been texting with at the time that you asked for it to ring. And it would say, hello, this is 3-Day Blinds calling for your scheduled call. Press 1 if you're ready to speak to a live agent. Press 2 if you need to reschedule for a different time. Press 9 if you're no longer interested in this offer. Something like that. Yep. So we could keep it all automated while scaling.
Okay. Why did you decide to do that? People are hard to scale. Most companies that are in software don't also want to be in the people business. Why did you decide to do that? And by the way, I got to stand up. I'm so freaking psyched about what you're talking about.
Yeah. Look, so there's a few things, right? Like, I loved automation, right? Like it's been my passion since I saw my buddy's office and his, you know, quote unquote, 127 non-existing 24/7, 365 workers. So I've always thought of that. You know, I've always had that kind of spammer marketer, you know, scale mentality. Yep. So there's no way to scale it with humans, right? I'd end up being a glorified call center operator, which is not interesting to me. But you know, scaling to the point where now I think we're doing, I think it's over 500,000 new leads a day are coming through our system. So that's millions and millions of concurrent conversations that are happening at Drips. And that's with a team of, you know, 30, 35 people in the office. So most of which is, you know, completely automated. But one thing I think that's interesting that we kind of skipped over, and I'd love your opinion on, but You're just maybe about my age, right? And you remember a time, I'm sure, when the phone rang and it was exciting, right? Where, like, you know, the phone rang in your kitchen or your parents' house and you run to the phone, right? And it's such a great moment in time. Fast forward to today and your wife will text you before she calls you, right? Somebody told me recently that calling somebody before texting is like walking into their living room without knocking on their front door, which I thought was funny. But why do you think that is? Like, I'm curious, like, what do you think? Why that big communication shift? Why do people not want to get a call?
My parents refused to get any kind of voicemail system. And I always hated the phone ringing. I hated that no matter what you did, my dad would make us go and run to the phone. And I thought, why am I on somebody else's schedule? Because they decided to call me. I don't even know who they are. It's on me now to get up, stop what I'm doing, stop the show, stop the food, stop whatever, and go get it. I don't like that. And the reason that I would prefer my wife text me is sometimes, like, this is a little, it's not too embarrassing, but the other day I was on my way to the bathroom and she called me. If she could have just waited a moment, I would have finished and come back, or I wouldn't have gone in. Give me like that little bit of a heads up that it's you, that it's about to call so I could be in a right spot for it. And the other problem is there is a lot of junk calls coming in. I actually think the phone companies are in for a world of trouble because they're not stopping it. And we are now afraid of picking up the phone because chances are really good that it's going to be a really useless call. It's going to be someone with area code and first 3 digits that are very similar to my phone number, pretending to be a neighbor, pretending to pick it up because it could be your kid's school. It sucks.
That's exactly right. So there's two big problems, right? One is the prevalence of robocalling or spam, right? And the problem with that is now companies, legitimate companies like 3-Day Blinds, who you just filled a form out for, are indistinguishable from them, right?
Right.
They also have a local presence because they have a local contractor and you're not answering that local person's call because you're scared of who it may or may not be. So texting allows them a way to at least say, hey, this is 3-Day Blinds, Andrew. I know you're probably at work. When should we talk? The other thing is, and you hinted at this, is we're all busy nowadays, right? Like back when I was younger, I had a boring childhood, right? Like we lived in, kind of humble beginnings from North Carolina. Me and my sister, if the phone rang, we were just excited to stop throwing sticks at each other or whatever we were doing, for entertainment at the time. We had six channels on our TV and the bunny ear things. Yeah. So I loved it. The phone rang, somebody's at the front door. It was a big deal for us. We would trip over ourselves to get to the phone. Fast forward to today, I'm always busy, right? Back then, what did we have on demand, right? I couldn't watch the shows I wanted when I wanted. If I was hungry, I'd have to make something, or maybe back then we had Domino's, I think, was the first on delivery, on demand food service, right? Fast forward to now, I can get any food I want from any restaurant I want with Uber Eats or Postmates or any, number of these different apps. If I want a date tonight, I don't even have to go hunting to try to meet somebody. I can just swipe right on an app. I can play any music I want. I can pause live sports. I mean, it's just, we have everything we want on demand on these little devices, yeah. Right? And what that means is we always have something to do, right? I can always be, watching Netflix or watching the game or whatever it is. And what I don't want is for you or, my wife or whatever to essentially call me in the middle of whatever it is I'm doing. And calls have essentially became an interruption to your day. It's a disrespect of your time. It's saying like, hey, Andrew, I want to talk to you now. So instead of like emailing you and scheduling with you, I'm just going to go ahead and call you, right? And that's the difference. We live in an on-demand economy now where the consumer has been conditioned, as we have been conditioned, to get whatever it is when we want it, how we want it, where we want it, on the right channel that we want it on, and nothing less. And if brands don't begin to understand this, they're going to continue to lose the attention of their clientele.
So I totally get that. What about the sales team? Can you only then work with people who have a sales team? Because I can imagine a lot of people listening in saying, you know what? I don't want to just randomly call my people. I do understand that calling is effective, but it's hard to set up a whole sales operation. It's hard to have somebody there to make the calls once Drips says, here's someone who's ready.
Well, keep in mind, Drips will do the calls. So we will do all the heavy lifting, all the outbound, all the conversations and the scheduling and the rescheduling. And what if they missed the call that Drips did?
But the actual sales call won't be by Drips?
Correct. No. So we will then turn the inbound call back to our clients. So we don't work with, solo shops or SMBs, small, medium businesses. We're definitely an enterprise solution. Where we will work with larger companies like creditrepair.com or debt.com or T-Mobile or, companies.
You guys have T-Mobile as a client?
Yep. Yeah.
I was just all right. Let's talk about how you moved up in the world to these bigger clients. Sure. I know that was a big challenge for you. So the first couple of clients, handful of clients came because you went to the conference, to the trade show.
Yep.
How did you get 3-Day Blinds? How did you get creditrepair.com? How did you get these people to take you seriously as a guy from nowhere? Well, I'll tell you, I think Joshua Fletcher is the one who introduced us. I think that I knew Joshua well enough to trust him, but still I had to go and do some research on you. How did you, without that introduction, without any of the background, get these clients to sign up and trust you with their users, with their customers?
Sure. Yeah. Look, it's not easy. I think it's always a stepping stone from one to the other, right? So we started with Tom. Now this is if you don't want to try to throw a lot of money on it, build a big sales force, cold call, et cetera, right?
You're just at a trade show going beyond Tom and his, and his direct network and your direct network.
And that's where it started, right?
So trust you.
Yeah. So we start with Tom, right? We go to a network, we establish ourselves there. We did a decent job on the brand and the logo and whatnot. So we already looked a lot bigger than we were. We were really just me, Tom, a girlfriend of ours who worked with us doing the chat rooms, and my co-founder Tony. And we were literally four people at the trade show. But we looked a lot bigger. We had this great domain name, drips.com, in drip marketing, right? Like, what better name could you get? I luckily bought that name for like $4,000 off somebody online. So that was a win.
Just whoever had it, you bought it that way.
Yeah. The guy had it listed on, it was parked. I can't remember what he had it for, but it was tens of thousands of dollars, which it's easily worth. And I emailed the guy and I was just like, hey man, I'm got the startup. This name would be super cool. And, talked to the guy and he was an investment guy. DRIPS, I guess, also could stand for an acronym. It's like derivative reinvestment plans or something like that. Dividend reinvestment plans. I can't remember. But anyway, got a good brand, got a good website, got a good logo.
I see you listed it with Sado.com or Sado. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? But so we started the trade show. Like I said, luckily we got 3-day blinds kind of really quick out of the gate. We
just were because they're willing to experiment and have things break.
Yeah,
that's the kind part, of
thing you want. Yeah, two parts. I knew an agency owner, one of my buddies, Warren, and he owned an agency who he had did some work for 3-day blinds. He knew what I was up to with DRIPS, and he's like, "Oh, you might be able to help these guys convert more of their leads to calls." So it was a problem they had. So that's been one very successful avenue for us is referrals through agencies, right? These agencies that'll work with these big brands that'll, you know, tee up vendors and tools and methodologies to these brands that may help the agency win the business. The second is just step-by-step social proof. So we started with Tom. Tom's friends obviously believe whatever it is that's working for Tom, because why wouldn't they believe them? Yeah. We did the work for them, right? And we got into credit repair with some of his friends. And then they were selling the credit repair calls to creditrepair.com. Right. So then we got an intro into creditrepair.com. And then that company's, we did very, very well for them. We helped them turn, I think, a 500 person outbound call center into a 250 person inbound call center. So much more efficient, much better CPAs, customer acquisition costs, whatever you call it. They, you know, we got mentioned at their board or to their PE level. And got, I think we're talking to one of the big tax one of the biggest tax companies that's in their portfolio now. So there's always a lot of word of mouth with these types of enterprises. They all share, you know, similar advisors or boards or PE backing, et cetera. So if we get into, you know, a home security company that's owned by PE with Rocket, Quicken guys, right? The Quicken Loans, Rock Ventures. All of a sudden it's very easy to get an intro into Quicken, right? So we can talk to them about their mortgage, thing. We closed one of the biggest, or the biggest rather, Medicare company in the country. And, on one of their board meetings with their PE firm, another one of their portfolio companies, True Green, was complaining about contact rates and this Medicare company raised their hand and said, "Hey, we haven't used it yet, but we're trying out these guys at DRIPS. Sounds like it's something you could use." 2 weeks later, my salespeople were at True Green. They closed it and we're about to launch with them, here in the next couple weeks. So it's a lot of that, really. Like, it's a lot about who you know, what proof you have, what case study you have, who will vouch for you, when you're at this level. That's really what it's all about. Because again, we're not going really the cold call route. We're going much more strategic in the enterprise accounts we attack.
All right. I'm going to come back in a moment and talk about what happened with Sprint, some of the challenges of being a bootstrap company, and then how you overcame them and what's next. But first, I've got to tell everyone about TopTal, and get this. I've been talking about TopTal AC for years now, and I know it's converting well for them, but in a past interview, I said, what we should do is freshen up the ads. I'd love, I said, to hire a writer to go and research some of the people who signed up for TopTal and turn them into case studies. So I have something interesting to say. And so this writer, Jacqueline Schiff, heard me and she said, I want to do it. Hire me. And I said, all right, let's see what you got. And so here's what she put together. I said, look, I can't have you write the whole ad. Give me some bullet points and I'll read it. But I freaking love the bullet points she wrote. She went out and she found out that one of the Mixergy listeners, a guy named Greg Archibald, longtime listener, he needed an experienced developer for his company, Greasebook. It's a software startup for the oil and gas industry. I love, by the way, when startups are like gearing towards something completely different. And he found that it was difficult to find and to screen top developers. I got to tell you, one of the best parts about being in San Francisco is if you're trying to find and screen developers, there are tons of companies around here that you can bounce ideas off of, that you can, again, help screening. But not everyone has that. And so Greg was in a bind. He didn't know how was he going to find the right person, especially in a heated job market. The local hiring pool was tough. Recruiters cost a lot of money. And so he said, you know what? This company that Andrew keeps talking about, TopTal, has an international talent pool of the best, and there's no recruiting fee. You know, they already have tested people. They've got them in their pool. So let's give it a shot. By using TopTal, not only was he able to find great developers, but he was able to focus on his business instead of getting distracted and looking for these people. He ended up hiring from TopTal. And as a result of that, he got selected for an energy accelerator, which would not just give them some funding. And we know accelerators don't give you the most amount of funding, but more importantly, they believe enough in you, see the vision, see the product, and they're willing to accelerate your growth. And that's what was happening with Greg because he signed up for TopTal. I've had people up and down Mixergy's growth curve, smaller companies, more advanced companies, and highly developed companies who need to hire a team of developers, all come to TopTal and hire from them. If you're looking to hire, here's a special URL where you are never going to get this offer from, well, not never, I don't know, maybe in the future they will, but they're not offering this to other people. Mixergy listeners are going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when they pay for their first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. If at the end of the period you're not 100% satisfied, meaning you're 99% satisfied, you're 98% satisfied, you just think it's okay, but it's not great, if you're not happy, you will not be billed. So all you have to do to get that offer is go to the special URL, hit that big green button. You will not start getting charged for anything. What you're doing is getting a call scheduled with one of their matchers. You talk to them about what you need. They will then go to their network and find people for you to talk to. Often it's one or two people because they get a sense of who you are and they know their team really well. And then they'll introduce you to them. If you like them, hire them and go on. If you don't, nothing happens. You just have an interesting experience. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/Mixergy. That's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, toptal.com/Mixergy. All right. And in the past, I told you guys, post this online. Please don't post it online anymore. They don't want to offer it to everyone else. Apparently, it's only a moneymaker for them with Mixergy people.
Well, I'm told.
I'm telling you, Mixergy listeners sign up, but it's the interviewees, I think, that they get the most bang for their buck from. They probably, if they could, they would probably pay me just to reach you before the interview started and then just run no ads.
Oh, look, hiring top talent. Great name, by the way, TopTal is everybody's problem. That's interesting. I'll personally look into them because we do pay a lot in recruitment fees. We spend a lot on internal recruiting efforts. And it's always, it's most medium-sized companies' biggest problem is the people.
Hey, you know what? And they had a different issue from you as far as funding. I think the first angel investor for TopTal was this well-known investor, just an angel investor. And then because of the reputation of the angel investor, Andreessen Horowitz said, all right, well, let's jump in there. We back them because we believe in this investor. They had an easy time raising money, and I don't think they've needed to do it ever since because, well, I don't want to get too much in their finances. They hate when I talk too much about their secret stuff. All right, you didn't get funding. I wonder how much of it is because you just are a bootstrapper and how much was it because you were trying to get funding and they didn't understand your business and didn't believe in you?
Yeah, no, it's almost exclusively the former. We up until last November, we never even entertained the idea of taking on partners, funding, strategic investors, et cetera. Never really needed to. Candidly, we could continue to grow at the rate we're growing, which is significant. I mean, we're doing often double-digit growth month over month still to date. But what we have realized that this is a market that we're just scratching the surface on. And while I could, you know, take our time and grow and bootstrap, you know, into forever, this is something that I think is going to, you know, is really going to just explode over the next year or so. SMS, chatbots, whatever you want to call it, this idea of automating communication, conversational marketing is one of the big buzzwords right now, right? Like not just direct marketing, but conversational marketing. And it's something that we have a good head start on, but it's something that we are just ill-equipped to attack the vastness of the space. I mean, we're talking about every service company, every insurance company, every car company, every internet company, phone company that is out there that employs a call center, which is most of these, if not all, service businesses. They should be using something better, right? It's not the 1970s anymore. Telemarketing call centers are not as impactful as they used to be. They're more expensive these days to run, and they're getting less returns. So that is why we've started to come around to the idea of taking on funding to accelerate our growth and candidly kind of put our flag down as the market leaders in this.
Hey, so you keep calling a conversational what was it?
Conversational texting.
Like, so conversational texting. When I was talking to you before the interview started about how I was going to describe you, it was very much about the mechanics of getting somebody on the phone. You said conversational texting. I wonder why. What's your vision here?
Well, it's really simple. It's putting the power of the conversation back in the user's hand, which no better way than texting, right? That being said, the user will forget. Like, you getting that insurance quote is not the most important thing in your day. So they have to be reminded. It has to be humanized because nobody wants to talk to a chatbot. That's one big difference between our system and any chatbot out there is you can't tell it's a bot. It is completely humanized. And when you may be able to trip it up to the point where you would be able to tell it a bot, it actually still gets flipped back to a human to respond with empathy and context. But, at the end of the day, it's a conversation before the sale has to happen, right? And it's just like me scheduling with you. There's certain channels that we need to go through as professionals to figure out a good time to connect. And that is happening with you and your wife. That's happening with me and my wife. It's happening with my employees. It's happening with consumers all over the place. There's this kind of micro scheduling conversation that happens before the need for a phone call. And sometimes, you know, maybe you can close the deal right over texting. I mean, we're playing with that. We're playing with appointment setting with 3-day blinds. We're playing with customer service and lifetime value increasing with other financial service clients. Maybe people don't even have to take a phone call, right? Like that's the ultimate win is, you know, a year from now, maybe you can just get your quote right over texting. Like, why do you have to get on the phone with an insurance agent these days? It's kind of crazy.
I do actually prefer the idea of texting to making phone calls. I love when I go to the Fairmont, one of the first things they do is they text me to say hi. And if you need anything, let us know. And then I was moving rooms from a regular room to a suite. I just texted them and with a picture of my luggage and the things I want to move. I said, could you move it? They said, sure. I said, is there a pool? They said, yes, but you can't swim in it. It's too small. You can't do laps. So helpful. And that's I wouldn't have felt as comfortable stopping my day to make a call. All right, I see where you're going with this. Let's talk about some of the challenges here. I don't want to give people the impression that this was just a happy-go-lucky experience without any hardships along the way. One of the challenges I kind of hinted at a few times, Sprint is a big company. You tried to get them. What happened with Sprint?
It's T-Mobile, but no big deal.
When you first started, you were saying to our producer, if I tried to close Sprint, I couldn't make it past their gatekeepers. The vendor manager would do due diligence and find out that we were a baby company and pass. So what specifically Sprint? You're saying when you tried to go after big companies like them.
Yeah, any enterprise, right? So when you go into big enterprises like that, and I didn't know this until just a year or so ago, there is a vendor due diligence, very similar to investing due diligence. They will look at your financial records. So we just closed, I can publicly say, we just signed Liberty Mutual recently. Their vendor due diligence was significant. You know, they expect a large degree of security and financial stability of a company. We are also an RFI, one of their biggest competitors who I can't name because I'm under order not to. And theirs is so diligent that they go into our financial records, actually. They look at the P&Ls, the financial records, the ARR of the company. And they're looking not only just for a healthy company that's solvent, but one that likely isn't going to sell next year. Like if they saw that we were just ripping the ball off the cover, you know, or making, you know, 99% EBITDA, they probably wouldn't work with us because they wouldn't think we'd be around in a year. And it's just so interesting that how these big companies have to operate because it is a big deal for them to integrate these types of tools or services. So they have to do their diligence to make sure that we are up to the security standards that they are. We have the correct insurance coverage that they do. Or they need, you know, for liability purposes, that we are compliant with all the laws and regulations that go on in the telecom space, which that's one of our big differentiators is we actually care about the laws and we try not to text people during hurricanes or, you know, state holidays or Sunday at 6 a.m. or whatever it may be. We build those things into our system. So we have very robust legal opinions to that degree. But all that stuff really matters when you start going to pitch those big companies. And every time you learn, you know, the first one, they're like, well, tell us about your disaster contingency plans. And we're like, oh, quick, somebody build a disaster contingency plan, you know, or, you know, things like that. Like some of the stuff you have to kind of build the plane as you're flying it. But every time it gets a little easier, right?
You know, that makes sense. And I wouldn't have thought of it. What they're saying is when somebody fills out one of the forms, things could be okay. But when we're texting them the next day, maybe there's a disaster. We don't want to text them asking them to get on a call with a salesman when there's a disaster. That's the thing.
Yeah. There's federal laws for that. So a big, big differentiator for drips is we spent, I mean, by now it's hundreds of thousands of dollars on legal work to make sure we are not only adhering to, but also defining some of the best practices in the texting and telecom space. So yeah, there's federal laws that say you cannot solicit to or market to a state that is under state of emergency. So currently North Carolina, South Carolina, and I think Virginia are still under state of emergency because of the flooding from the recent hurricane. So during the time of the hurricane and even thereafter until that ban is lifted, you are not meant to or supposed to solicit to their residents.
And that's true via text.
It's any call, any marketing call. Now any telecom reach out, you know, they kind of consider texting the same as a call for the laws that we have to abide by. There's state regulations, you know, state by state, like certain states honor Memorial Day or Labor Day a different day of the week than other states. There is, you know, there's like a General Lee state holiday in Arkansas or something like that. I mean, there is, you know, different days of the week you can dial at different times of the day. So
because you're marketing to all these different places, you now have to be aware of it. And every time you talk to an enterprise client who has a legal team that's aware of it, you learn more, you go back and you improve the software. And that's one of the reasons why you're able to grow. You also mentioned our producer. Look, one of our challenges is that we're serving 4 dozen different verticals. I didn't even know there would be 4 dozen different verticals. I guess the blinds industry, I wouldn't think of as a vertical, but that is one.
That is.
And then you've got the telecom industry and so on. How does it affect your business that you're going after so many different industries?
It's hard. And in the beginning, when you bootstrap, and I'm sure there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there know this, but you hire anybody who will come work for cheap, right? You close any deal you can. You take any money you can from any client you can, because you have to, right? Because otherwise you're going to run out of money. So that is kind of the problem that we started with was, you know, yeah, we started kind of in financial services, you know, credit repair, student loan consolidation, debt consolidation, just because it naturally one lended to the other. But quickly thereafter, when we're going to these trade shows, we had people come up to us like, well, we do real estate, we do window treatments, we do prepaid credit cards, we do insurance. I mean, everything, right? And we're like, well, sure, we're solving the same problem, right? We're solving contact problem. People don't want to get calls, they'd rather get a text. So like that works across the spectrum. What unfortunately happens though is you quickly become a mile wide and an inch deep.
So what's the difference between reaching someone who's in one industry versus the other? I would think that it's all the same phone.
No, the plumbing is the same, meaning yes, we're just sending a text message to a person's phone, but there's different intent levels, there's different psychological profiles for different buyers. You know, somebody who's looking for a divorce attorney is a very different user than somebody who randomly saw Save Money on Geico on Facebook.
And you're communicating with them. It's not just that it's software, it's also the writing skills involved in creating the bot, the people who are, I see the challenges. All right. Challenge for you guys. You guys hired a fractional CFO. What's a fractional CFO?
Fractional CFO is a chief financial officer that comes in for some amount of hours a week to help with strategy and projections and things like that.
Okay. I've done that again through TopTal. Phenomenal. You had an interesting situation though. The guy looks at your data and what happened?
Well, so I don't like to point the finger on this too much, but what happened was I didn't realize at the time, this was a good learning experience for me, that these fractional CFOs are really meant to be CFOs, right? Like be strategy. They're not meant to be in the weeds and check in the day-to-day transactions. And what happened was this fellow who came in to help us out was doing just that. He was looking at month-over-month projections, month-over-month spending, assuming that this month will be similar to last month as far as growth patterns or shrinkage or margin expansion or contraction. And we were quickly running out of space at our existing office, and we decided we wanted to move offices. And we did this, you know, beautiful build-out. It was all budgeted. It was in the forecast. You know, it looked like we were going to be super good with tons of cash in the bank. You know, spent $100,000 on this build out, including this, you know, beautiful piece of custom furniture you see in front of you with all this junk in it. And then one day, Tony, my CTO, who is definitely the numbers guy. I mean, he is the guy that finds all the mistakes anywhere. You know, if a nickel is missing, he'll find it. He comes to me and he's like, "Hey man, the CFO's projections are just insanely off, right? Like by $150,000, which at the time was, you know, a couple few months of our payroll, I think." And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" He's like, "Well, we have this much in the bank. He thought we had this much. We're going to lose $100,000 this month when we thought we were going to make $100,000 profit." And it was just completely wrong. All right. So we had a meeting with the guy the next day, and we asked him, we're like, "Hey, how do you think this month is looking?" "Well, it's looking great. You know, you guys are scheduled to grow by another 30%. I mean, we were doing, you know, 20-30% week over week growth at that point. And he expected that J curve to continue, and we had a bad month, you know, lost a big client, or, you know, somebody slowed down. I can't remember what, but that growth did not continue. And instead of having, you know, a few months of payroll in the bank, we were at a point where we were looking to maybe, instead of finishing building up this new office, we might have to do layoffs because we were operating off of a bad forecast, unfortunately.
So, and what did you end up doing to recover from that?
Just struggled, you know. Me and Tony, I'm sure, you know, turned off our measly salaries at the time, and we scraped by, and we just did what we do best and bootstrapped, and, you know, resold into some companies and expanded some things, and that was it. You know, we slowed down the build out, of course. I mean, there was a point where we just had stopped everything. There was still like drywall hanging in some places. We're sitting on boxes in other places. But you know, we had to pause on a lot of hiring that we wanted to do. We had to pause on finishing some of the build outs we wanted to do. And we had to get right back to selling and growing. And, that was when we realized, like, we didn't need a fractional CFO. We needed a controller, you know, or a full-time, staff accountant, you know. And now we have a, you know, nice finance department, and maybe soon actually we'll look to get a fractional CFO again, which is kind of funny. But we needed somebody in the weeds, looking at the numbers day to day, week over week. And since then, literally still today, today's Wednesday, right? Yesterday, Tuesday, we have a standing finance meeting where we go over cash flow, we go over burn rate, we go over hiring plans, what we're spending on trade shows. And every single week we look at this cash flow now. We still don't operate
when
on
you
a,
say we, who does that? You and who else?
It's me, my co-founder, Anthony, Tom also often joins. It's us three on the board. And it's my COO, John Dearborn. We just brought him on recently. Great hire for me specifically. And Rich, our controller. So it's a team, you know, it's a finance committee, and we are every day looking, you know, are we making money? Are we losing money? How much are we making? How much are we losing? What do we need to speed up on? What do we need to slow down on? And that's just the way you have to do it when you're bootstrapping. There is no, you know, popping your head up once a month to see how the September's P&Ls went. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, you know what? That has helped me so much. And I think we need to do it even more often. I don't do it weekly, but maybe I should. And make sure that all the numbers are in there once a week. All right. What's the best part of having built this? You've worked hard. You almost didn't get to finish your office. It looks like now it's finished. You could have gotten knocked out a couple of times. What's the best part of having built Drips up to where it is today?
Oh man. It's a lot of learning for me, right? Like that's probably my favorite part. I'm big into improvement and challenge and learning and scaling and automation, and just the amount of data that we get to play with is just amazing. You know, we've had almost a couple hundred million conversations through the system so far, and we still have not hired a data scientist. We still have not done much with big data. So it's always a constant learn. It's always a constant, you know, battle, right? Like we're still trying to hit, like I said, double digit month over month growth numbers. Like that is a hard thing to do at 10 million ARR, but we every month, every quarter, we continue to challenge ourselves. So the challenge is fun to me. You know, being a founder, being a bootstrap type guy, like it's just the obsessiveness of it is fun to me. The team is great. Building this culture and environment has been very fun and very rewarding. Oftentimes we'll get dinner together at the office. We have a full-time chef here, so we have lunch every single day together. You know, it's just building the team and trying to attack more of the market, just trying to come up with the next challenge and the next stuff.
I feel like you picked such a great spot to be in. I mean, I say this all the time. My wife and I text each other more than we call. The people I work with will send text or chat messages with to me more than email, more than phone calls. And still there are businesses that are phone obsessed. And I think you're helping them get through to the next, the way we interact today. All right. If anyone wants to go check out your business, it is the easiest. I kept like second guessing myself when I typed it in. Is it drips.co, drips.is or something? No, it's just drips.com. I can't believe you got it for such a low price. It is a great URL. The thing that I recommend everyone do is the thing that helped me a lot is just check out that video on the homepage. It's one of those simple explainer videos. In a minute, you understand how the company works. And if you want to continue to work with them, there are lots of different ways to do it. Probably you might want to try the phone number just to experience this whole thing for yourself. Thank you so much for doing this. And I also want to thank the two sponsors who made this happen. The first is Top Tal, top of your head, talent is in talent, toptal.com/mixergy when you're hiring. And if you want to get beautiful designs done by a crowd of designers who are going to blow your mind, go check them out at designcrowd.com. AC, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate it. It's fun.
Same here. Bye. Bye, everyone. Bye.